Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We mentioned earlier about Justin Schultz that the Edmonton Oilers had Wayne Gretzky call Justin Schultz. The Anaheim Ducks allegedly had Scott Niedermeyer call him as well. Justin Schultz wouldn't take Scott Niedermeyer's phone calls, further upsetting the Anaheim Ducks organization.
Does Justin Schultz think he's LeBron James? Like, what's going on here? Did I miss something?
We'll talk more.
Can Steve Tamblyn not bother Wayne Gretzky or Kevin Lowe not bother Wayne Gretzky to call some young defenseman out of the NCAA who's happened to decide to leave his team in the dust and go sign wherever he wants and grab as much attention as he wants?
Not sure, but you know who we called? We called Aaron Portsline. Let's go to him.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Aaron Portsline, the Columbus Dispatch. Good morning, Aaron. How are you?
Good. Good morning. Happy almost Canada Day to you.
Thank you very much. Some Rick Nash news earlier this morning. We mentioned your tweet on air, but for those just joining us, do you want to maybe update our listeners as to what's going on with Rick Nash?
Yeah, not news per se, but there's a sense that things have taken a turn here from yesterday to today, in the sense that there was not much going on at all yesterday, and the sense now is that things are heating up, that maybe the market that Scott Housen has been waiting for other teams to get more serious with their offers, that perhaps it's leaning toward that now. Nothing imminent that I can tell. Unfortunately, I haven't tapped the GM's line directly, but I guess it would not be a shock if something happened here either later today or in the coming days. Nothing set in stone, but it's getting more interesting now.
Well, we've been pretty good about hurrying up and waiting on this issue, so we'll continue to do that. Before we get more into the Rick Nash talk, there was a lot of chatter earlier this week. You reported about the gargantuan offer that the New York Islanders made to the Columbus Blue Jackets at the draft. They pretty much offered their entire draft to the Blue Jackets to move up to second overall. Question: How seriously did Scott Housen consider making that deal with the New York Islanders?
Well, I think, it's one of those deals that's interesting. When you look at it on paper, you scratch your head and you think, how could anybody ever say no to this? It's insane. Who's crazy here, the guy that offered it or the guy who said no? I think, upon further review, it comes down to this, that they do believe, some other people might not, but they do believe, and apparently the Islanders do too, that Ryan Murray was far and away the best defenseman available in this draft. They didn't think it was worth it to go down to number four and to get to add the number 34 and then a bunch of other picks down the line. So they said, no. Did he seriously consider it? I think he took it seriously. I think it was something that they considered. We found out yesterday that there was some talk as to maybe seeing if the Islanders would make it next year's first-round draft pick instead of this year's, which would then give the Blue Jackets three cracks at Nathan MacKinnon. They'd have their pick, the Islanders' pick, and the Kings' pick. But even that, I don't think, ever got too far off the ground, because it just came down to this. They really wanted Ryan Murray.
Aaron, did the NHL contract limit, I believe 50 contracts, did that play a factor here?
No, not at all. And you know what? To be clear, they would draft these guys. They would not sign them to contracts, in some cases for 2 years, in some cases for many more, if these guys are in Europe or if they're in college, so I don't think that had any bearing on it whatsoever.
Would you have made that deal?
You know what? I mean, it's tough to say, frankly, because I'm not seeing these guys all year, the prospects, the Murrays and Dumbas and Griffin Reinhardt and those guys. All I know is what you hear from scouts, and they like Murray. Some people think that Dumba, some people think Reinhardt, Riley, some of these guys might have higher-end help than Murray. It's too easy, I think, for somebody in my position to say that they're crazy to not take it, because you don't know these players. You go into the draft and these guys are names and they have rankings and they have a lot of superlatives thrown around them. I don't think anybody can say if it's right or if it's wrong. And you know what? I don't think anybody will know until 3 or 4 or 5 years down the line, when these players reach their, you know, where they're going to be NHL-wise when they fit into their teams and into the league, then we'll be able to look back and say if the Blue Jackets were wrong to not make that move or if they actually made the right call.
So, Aaron, this is obviously going to be the $64,000 question, and we touched on it with you at the beginning of the interview. Do you think Rick Nash is going to move either today or tomorrow? And obviously you know that it's a tough question to answer because you've been following this more than anybody. But do you think it's also possible that it's going to take a little bit longer for him to move and see, you know, based on what the free agency market presents? You know, is he going to move? Is he going to move? You know, sooner or later?
Well, I don't. Yeah, I know where you're going. I think it could happen today. As we said earlier, things are seem to be warming, anyways. But I we've been saying all along that probably the best, the most likely scenario is somewhere between July 2nd and 5th. After Zach Parise decides where he's going, maybe Bobby Ryan has a new destination. And then Scott Housen gets what he wants, which is scarcity. There aren't too many 30-goal guys on the market. He's got the only guy left. And if the Rangers don't get Parise, if they don't get Bobby Ryan, then, and it's not just the Rangers, it's other teams that are looking for 30-goal scorers. If they're left without that and there's one guy left, then yes, the offers should improve. There's also the risk that Scott Housen ends up without a chair when the music stops, and then you've got a real potentially messy situation with Rick Nash remaining in Columbus as training camp dawns.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch. Now, Aaron, one of the names that the team's rumored to be involved in the Rick Nash discussions are the Ottawa Senators. You know, the rumor was they offered Mika Zibanejad, Robin Lehner, you know, a goaltender, and a first-round pick for Rick Nash. The problem being Nash doesn't have Ottawa as one of his approved teams. You know, sort of two-part question. One, do you see that changing? And two, why wouldn't Nash be interested in going to Ottawa?
You know, I don't know why Ottawa would not be on the list. I don't think it's as simple as some people wish to make it. I don't think it's just what the team is like, how the team is built, how competitive they are. I think it's bigger than that. It's everything about organizations. It's where the rink is located, what the level of attention in that market would be. Maybe that's why some people don't think Toronto's on the Nash wish list either. I don't know. Rick Nash hasn't said word one since the season ended. He's kept his word in that respect. Not even responding to text as he has in previous summers. He's gone down low. So nobody really knows exactly why teams landed on the list. Honestly, nobody really knows what the list is, if I can be honest with you. We know for sure that Ottawa is not on it. That's been confirmed. But for people to say that this team is on, they know this team's on, this team's off the list. Nobody has seen the list other than Rick Nash, his agent, and Scott Housen. So I tend to play it on the other side of safe here. Unless I've seen the list, I can't speak with any authority as to who's entirely on it beyond the fact that we know Ottawa is not.
Transitioning, Aaron, from, you know, Rick Nash and the forward group to the back end, this week the Blue Jackets re-signed Nikita Nikitin, 2 years, $2.15 million cap hit per season. What were your thoughts on that contract?
You know what, Nikitin was a real surprise, a revelation last season in Columbus, a guy that I knew nothing about. Frankly, I don't think most people in the NHL knew anything about because he'd played so sparingly and not to any great achievement in St. Louis, and boy, he came to Columbus, and you know, maybe it's a relative thing, but he really stood out. Has much better hands than I ever would have imagined. Probably the best one-timer on the back end. Really lets it loose. Maybe not the best shot. That's probably Wisniewski, but in terms of snapping one off quick, directly off the path, he is the best on the team. I think it's a fair number. I think if he produces anywhere close to what he did this season in limited time, I mean, look at this. We ran this number from November 12th when he first debuted for the Blue Jackets until the end of the season. He was 17th in the league among defensemen in scoring, ahead of Doughty, ahead of Seabrook. He really produced at a high level for them. So if he comes anywhere close to that, it's a great contract.
Okay, Aaron, if my last question was the $64,000 question, this is the $128,000 question.
Your math's good, is he?
Why, I had to use a calculator for that one. Why or why not is Sergei Bobrovsky the answer to Columbus's goaltending issues?
That, my friend, is the $256,000.
Okay, you one-upped me.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing. I mean, Bobrovsky was not a good goaltender last year. I know, that's a scoop right there. He and Mason really struggled. Mason's now been struggling for 3 years. They think there's something there with Bobrovsky, 23-year-old goaltender. Showed an enormous amount of promise his rookie year. Got some Calder Trophy votes. They think that this kid can be a very competitive goalie, that he can compete for the number one spot. Now, I readily acknowledge that this is going to be a sore spot or a soft spot with the team here heading into the season. They're not going to score a lot of goals, especially after they trade Rick Nash, and their goaltending is going to be filled with two major question marks. In my opinion, a good team does not have two goaltenders who can possibly be number one goaltenders as their tandem. They have a solid, proven number one goaltender. Columbus is not in that spot. Steve Mason has played his way out of that role. And I still think there's a chance that they could be active or try to be. I know they're going to try to be active free agent-wise to bring somebody else in as maybe an answer. So we'll see.
Aaron, we'll let you go on this last question. It's worth $512,000, given the inflationary rate here. John Davidson, there's a lot of chatter about him coming on board in the Columbus Blue Jackets organization. Is he going to be the new president of the Blue Jackets? And if so, do you expect some front office changes?
Actually, this is the $1.024 million question. you know what? As far as I can tell, he is still a Blue, and I think the situation with the Blues is, if you don't want me here anymore, fire me, because why would I quit and walk away from $6 million? So he's going to keep, it's sort of like Office Space, he's going to keep showing up until someone fires him, or until, and I'm being a bit facetious, they have to figure out a getaway package here for John Davidson before he leaves. And as soon as that is figured out, then as soon as that divorce is finalized, then he's free to marry again. But I caution people because there are no guarantees that his next venture will be in the similar seat that he holds in St. Louis. It could be that, and I think the Blue Jackets above any team in the league would benefit from having him in place. You hear Calgary is possibly interested as well. I don't know if I believe that or not, but he is such a polished broadcaster. He could get a gig, a very well-paying gig, a $1.024 million paying gig in broadcasting if he chose. Those are the options before him, and there's no sense for sure that he would be headed to Columbus, even if he does get out of the Blues here soon.
Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch, your check for $2,048,000 is in the mail. Thanks very much for joining us.
It'll never end. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for coming on again.
Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Aaron Portsline for that insight into the Columbus Blue Jackets and Rick Nash. A quick update. Colby Armstrong has been bought out by the Toronto Maple Leafs. He will go on to unconditional waivers in about 10 minutes' time. So if anybody wants Colby Armstrong, a guy who had injury problems in Toronto, but has some talent and had some productive years with the Atlanta Thrashers, you can have him pretty much for nothing in about 10 minutes' time from now.
That's if you're a general manager. Fans that are this show that are driving in their car listening, they can't sign him.
They could try.
Him and Crosby are buddies. Wonder if he goes back to Pittsburgh.
It'll be something that's worth checking out. Let's continue. We didn't quite finish off the Northeast Division, so let's continue there. Let's go to
Saskatchewan boy, too. Maybe the Jets will make a call on that one.
Talking about Colby Armstrong again?
Yeah, third line right
winger.
Always
like Colby Armstrong's game.
The Jets have him, third line right wing.
He's an underrated player.
Ottawa Senators. We mentioned them being part of the Rick Nash deal. If I'm Rick Nash, you know, the Ottawa Senators seem like an attractive destination to me.
Yeah, sure do.
Eric Carlson's lined up. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you play Jason Spezza. You just said it, Drew.
Yeah.
Spezza.
He's never played with anyone as good as Spezza.
Yeah, and say if they do bring him in, then Alfredson maybe comes back. They have Mihailuk. I like Colin Greening as a player. Kyle Turris obviously has some talent. Throwing guys like Foligno, who will eventually re-sign. And a back end that moves the puck well with Carlson and Gonchar. You have a couple of solid netminders there, too. Three, really, with Anderson, Bishop, and Leonard. And you have some guys in the system like Zibanejad, although they'd lose Zibanejad if they made that trade, but yep. There are other guys in the system that that people have high hopes for. So I think Ottawa is a team on the rise, a team with a tremendous center who's a great pass-first player, who actually has a great shot, Spezza, but pass-first player. I think actually Nash is a little harder to play with than people think. But it's a place that you'd want to go. I don't know why he wouldn't want to go. For example, if he would go to a place like San Jose, why wouldn't he go to a place like Ottawa?
I mean, you know, there's some truth to the comment about the media attention. But, I mean, Ottawa's not overwhelming like Toronto is or Montreal or Vancouver.
You've got a citizen in the Sun. Hey, look, and you'll have your Globe correspondent, but and maybe your National Post guy. But, I mean, 3-4, you're not dealing with, like, Toronto, Montreal pressure. It's more akin to Winnipeg pressure.
I also never found it to be an unfair media market. Yeah. Sometimes these markets get a little bit unfair to players. I never found that in Ottawa to be unfair.
That's
and
fair.
Drew, I think it's a good point, though. When you look at the Ottawa Senators, obviously they've made one of their big moves already, and that is signing Erik Karlsson. But you look at Rick Nash and the top two teams on his list, the Rangers and the Sharks. And I think that the Rangers are a little bit ahead of the Sharks, but you look at the teams he wants to go to. Rick Nash has languished in Columbus, and that's why he wants to get out of there. He's had enough of that, and he deserves that because he is one of the top wingers in the league. But the two teams that he wants to go to, who does he want to play with? Joe Thornton, Brad Richards, Jason Spezza, if it's Ottawa. And
Spezza's better than both of them.
I think Spezza's a top five center in the NHL. And if you remember the goal he scored against the Winnipeg Jets, I mean, it was superhuman.
It was sick.
And
It was an assist. But he skated through four guys.
I think it was second to Andrei Pavlik in the TSN Play of the Year, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, the Ottawa Senators, that's exactly what they need. And if you pick up a guy like Rick Nash, fine. You give Zibanejad. Leonard's a good goaltending prospect. That's fine. Like Richie said, you've got two goaltenders. The Ottawa Senators are a couple pieces away, I think, from making a good run in the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's how good you are when you've got Karlsson and Spezza and Mahalik. Mahalik still hasn't really, you know, shown enough as far as I'm concerned. I think he's got more to prove, and he's still relatively young.
The Senators have $26 million in cap space. In terms of RFAs that they have to re-sign, they shouldn't be that expensive. Nick Foligno is probably the biggest name of them all. Yeah. It shouldn't be too serious. Only have four defensemen under contract, Karlsson, Gonchar, Phillips, and Jared Cowan. So that would be an area that they would probably look to target on the back end there. They've called up most of their defensive depth from the minors. It's already...
Well, their base right now is Karlsson and Cowan. That's their base.
Exactly. So, I mean, that would be an area, if they're going to be active in free agency, that would be the area that you can look at there for
Ottawa. Yeah, because Kuba, you know, it did fit in well on the back end there. And the question is, you know, who is going to play with Karlsson? So that's the question.
Well, exactly. So, I mean, the Senators are a team that you can look out for. Certainly a team on the rise. Yes. And if you can add Rick Nash into that mix, you know, if you can add Rick Nash without giving up a guy off your active roster, and I know Mika Zibanejad's supposed to be a good player and everything, mm-hmm. but if you can add Rick Nash there, I think you've done something pretty impressive. And just a matter of, I guess, selling him on the city as a potential destination.
And again, I don't know what the sale needs to be, though. I mean, is Rick Nash like a pretty boy or something here? Like, what's the issue?
It's a good question. I mean, we don't know
Toronto,
the answer to that.
Toronto's not anymore attractive. I mean, you can't ask for a better center to play with than Jason Spezza. And you look at the team, and they're going in the right direction. They have arguably one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League signed for the next 7 years. I don't know. They have a good fan base. It's a good city to live in. Good quality of life. I mean, there's no issues with the school stuff. I would say that would be a good idea.
It would seem to be a good idea to me, too. So we'll see what happens with Ottawa, especially in the next...
San Jose, Drew, quickly. San Jose's traded all their prospects. They don't have any prospects. They have a poor system, so it's hard for them to trade anybody that's not in their active roster. And is that what Columbus wants, an active roster player for Rick Nash? Apparently that's not what they want. So how do you find that mix?
It's a very good point. Toronto Maple Leafs, the final team in the Northeast Division. They made their big move is probably acquiring James Van Riemsdyk.
Which was a good move.
Yeah, it was.
A very good move. I mean, I liked Van Riemsdyk really from the start of the year when it sounded like he was on the outs in Philadelphia. And just to give up Luke Shen for him only, I thought they did pretty well in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Drew, we know...
They'll overpay for some free agents.
We obviously know this, and you know, if you've been watching TSN, you've seen, you know, the images of Brian Burke, and I think Cliff Fletcher was in there. Trying to woo Justin Schultz.
Yeah, yeah. What a shirt he was wearing. Oh, my God.
They want... I think I have that same shirt. Obviously, the Leafs want a defenseman, an offensive defenseman, and they could use more help on, I would say, more so... they need a top six forward.
A center, preferably.
They need a center. And, I mean, you know, getting Van Riemsdyk helps. But, you know, they need more scoring. Last year... You know, the Leafs did very well. You know, Kessel and Leupel, they had a nice year there. But then when those guys stopped scoring, you know, then you were counting on other guys and they couldn't get it done.
The problem is up the middle, if you're going to put up Grabowski, Lombardi, and Connolly, I mean, you could step on all three of them. So you need some sides up the middle there. And you can always move those guys to the wing. So you have guys obviously, and they have Bozak who can play center as well. So you need a center and a winger, but ideally you want a bigger center and another scoring winger.
Is this the year that Nazem Kadri and Joe Colborne become full-time Toronto Maple Leaf players?
Maybe. Where do they fit in amongst all the other players they have?
They're not ready to step into a top six role. A guy that just, you know, comes to my mind, and
maybe they. Maybe.
I'm not starting something, but a guy that I'm spitballing is the word, right? Maybe like an Olli Jokinen as a center, as a free agent, a guy like that. I mean, you gotta consider this, Drew. There's not a lot of guys out there. I mean, you're talking to the free agent forwards.
Not a bad thought, Ezzy. I mean, he's not a great passer, but he's a big guy. He had a pretty good year before he got injured last year. And
he's not coming back to Calgary. George Johnson said that on this show.
He would add size, and the question is, do you want to have him and Grabowski and then, you know, have the third line center of Lombardi? Maybe you throw Connolly on the wing there.
Yep.
It's not the worst idea.
Leafs have $12 million.
I've had worse ideas.
The Leafs have $12 million.
And it's not going to cost you a lot of years, too, Drew.
Right. He's 35 years old or whatever he is at this point. Leafs have $12 million in cap space. They only have five defensemen under contract. Cody Franson's an RFA there.
A little bit disappointed in the way he's turned out. A few years ago, I thought he was going to be a good defenseman, and Nashville soured on him.
They didn't sour on him. That was the price that Nashville had to pay for the Leafs to take Matthew Lombardi.
Right.
Well, I guess they didn't sour, but they were willing to part with him to get...
They had to get out from under the Lombardi contract because he had his concussion problems, and was the problem that the Leafs were facing.
The problem you also have there is just the defensemen and their defensive ability. I mean, Randy Carlisle's system will help insulate some of those defensemen, but, you know, you have Komisarek who can hardly get around the ice. Not a great skater. Finofi who doesn't pay attention to defensive responsibilities. Lyles, who's never been the most defensively apt player. Jake Gardner, who's not big enough to defend in front
of the net. They're
very
high on Gardner.
The
they're going to give him a lot of time.
Sure, all that, but you need to be able to defend. And just again, their mix is all over the place.
Yep.
And that's, I mean, and the problem with the Leafs especially is that they have to overpay to get free agents.
They do.
Which is bizarre to sort of think about it, but people won't necessarily want to play there because of the...
If again,
the extra baggage that comes with them.
If they were winning, Drew, I think that would be different.
When's the last time they won? They never win.
That's the problem.
That's the problem. In the history of this program, and
that's for sure,
they've never won. And going back years before that.
Drew, how about this? We haven't even touched on this. They need a starting goaltender. I mean, James Reimer is a good goalie, but James Reimer, obviously from Manitoba, came into the league, and it's a great story. I don't know if James Reimer is ready to play 60 or 65 games in the NHL now. I think James Reimer can be a backup, but I don't think he's the answer there, and that's why Roberto Luongo's name has been linked. So we'll be watching that as well.
If I'm Roberto Luongo, I don't want to go to Toronto.
No, I don't think
he will go to Toronto.
No, I don't think he will.
Roberto Luongo, I go anywhere where I'm wanted.
You'd go to Toronto if you were Roberto Luongo?
Who else would want him?
Well, you know,
there's no market for him. I don't know what this is. Why does Mike Gillis is playing this really well? Oh, somebody's going to give up something for this goalie making over $5 million for a 10-year deal, who is, you know, arguably crumbles under pressure.
What about the New York Islanders, Richie, where it all started?
I mean, you have DiPietro and Luongo. They'll be signed through 2800.
Yeah. Hey, they love giving goaltenders big deals. So
let's go to break. When we come back, Mike Colligan from HockeyWriters.com is going to join us to talk Pittsburgh Penguins. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked. Well done.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's our good friend with the HockeyWriters.com and Forbes.com, Mike Colligan. Mike, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, guys. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. Just getting geared up for tomorrow and the start of NHL free agency. One guy who probably won't ever hit free agency in his career is Sidney Crosby. Are the people in Pittsburgh happy with the Crosby signing? But, you know, you have to assume they are. But, you know, how much of a risk is in that contract because it can't be insured?
You know, that's exactly right. And something I've thought of over the last couple of days is there's really been no negative feedback. It's over $100 million, and I guess when it's from a fan's perspective, when it's not your money, that's not something you're too worried about. But from an ownership perspective, certainly a huge risk when you're looking at the term here. But when you're talking about Sidney Crosby, this is a guy that really could name his price, name his term, and I didn't see anything the Penguins were really going to be able to do to keep him from getting that. And I think he took a very favorable cap hit, kept it at $8.7 million a year, which I think works well for the Penguins, and especially heading into free agency. And I think in return, Crosby got the lifetime deal that he wanted, and kind of gives him the security of having that long-term deal in place with all the concussion issues that he's dealt with the last couple seasons.
Mike, is that going to cap, you know, the eventual negotiations with Evgeny Malkin? Is that going to cap Evgeny Malkin's annual average salary?
I think so. You know, it's tough to predict what will happen in the next year here when Malkin is now up for a new contract next summer, or at least can begin to negotiate that new contract. But I think it's going to become like the Nicholas Lidstrom rule in Detroit, where now Crosby has set the bar. And it, for Malkin, if he wants to stay here long term, which I think he will, I think, you know, I've seen a few people suggesting this may lead to Malkin getting traded or asking for $14 million. I don't see it. I think Malkin's a guy, I think, in the last year and a half with that ACL injury, he's really matured on and off the ice, become, you know, a team player, a guy that I think is totally on board, and I'd expect a pretty painless extension for him as well. Yeah, I think we'll see $8.7 million, and, you know, it sounds like with the new CBA, he may not be able to get that term, but I think it'll be something that should be done pretty quickly, and we'll see what else the Penguins can do with all the newfound cap space that they do have.
You mentioned Crosby and, of course, Malkin, and because of those two players being ahead of him and the pecking order, Jordan Staal ends up in Carolina. What's been the reaction to that trade in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, it's been generally positive. I think they played it well from a public perspective as far as getting the news out there that when the team offered him 10 years, $60 million, I think everyone could agree that was a pretty good and fair offer. Maybe he could get more on the open market, but as far as committing to him long-term, giving him pretty good money for, you know, a third center role, as you mentioned, I think it was something that when people saw he rejected that, I noticed the whole city kind of changed their whole perspective on the situation, and there was just a roar after he was traded and they announced it at the draft on Friday here in Pittsburgh, and I think that was very telling as to what the public thought of it, and I thought they got a great return in what was essentially a one-horse race there. He made his intentions pretty clear. He was interested in going to Carolina. I give General Manager Ray Giroux credit for, you know, getting the Rangers involved and a few other teams that I don't think were very realistic at any point, and really got a pretty nice return of a number 8 pick in last weekend's draft, a good prospect in Brandon Sutter, as you mentioned.
Mike, after the Jordan Staal trade was made with the Carolina Hurricanes, you know, it started to come out, I guess, and the media wheels started to turn about whether the Pittsburgh Penguins were now going to use some of that money to go after Zach Parise and or Ryan Suter. How serious do you think the Pittsburgh Penguins are about signing one of those two guys? And maybe also, are there any other players on the free agent market that maybe the Pittsburgh Penguins might go after?
Well, I think not only that Staal trade, but the key was that the second trade that they made later that evening after the first round had ended, and it was almost a salary dump of Zbigniew Mihalik, who I think is one of the best shutdown defensemen, and he heads back to Phoenix and probably heads back to obscurity where none of us would really talk about him, but I think he's a talented guy, and they really didn't get a lot in return for him. So that tells me that was essentially a salary dump for them. And from everything I've heard, that's setting a table for them to really be active tomorrow. They're going to push hard for Suter and Parise, from what I can tell, and, you know, see what they can get as far as, you know, filling these holes now. Because when you think of it, they lost their best defensive center in Jordan Staal. They lost their best defensive defenseman in Zbigniew Mihalik. And this was a team that allowed 30 goals and one series to the Philadelphia Flyers, so certainly defense wasn't their forte heading down the stretch. So there are some holes to fill there. You know, when you look at the free agency wire, though, there's not a lot out there. I wonder if they miss out on Parise and Suter, they may head to the trade market and see what they can acquire that way, because with a few trades they've made and all the stockpiling that they've done on defense the last year, I mean, they've got the best stable of young defensemen in the entire league, and those are the things that are really valuable to other teams. I wouldn't be surprised that maybe they use some of those trade chips to see what they can acquire as far as NHL-ready players.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Mike Colligan of HockeyWriters.com and Forbes.com. Now, Mike, you mentioned the Penguins' defensive woes, especially in that series against Philadelphia. You know, if you look at the Penguins' roster, you know, is there anybody in that on the roster, either in the system or on the active roster, who is, you know, going to be able to fill the void that the Penguins have right now on the back end?
You know, one guy that I thought really came on last year was Matt Niskanen. Niskanen came over in the James Neal, Alex Goligoski trade at the deadline a couple years ago and really struggled at first. But last year was his first full year with the Penguins, and I thought he really developed as the season went along. He's a restricted free agent right now and actually coincidentally has the same agent, Neil Sheehy, as Ryan Suter. So maybe there's some impact there because the Penguins haven't been able to get him locked up to a deal so far. Niskanen rejected his qualifying offer. So I wonder if maybe, you know, if they miss out on Suter, they might see Niskanen as a guy that can move into that top four. And I think he can play on the power play. I think he had some great years in Dallas as a young guy along with Sergei Zubov and seemed to just kind of fall off track for a little bit. So I think that's a guy that certainly could emerge. And then they've got two youngsters that are just right on the edge of making a pretty big impact, I think, at the NHL level, and that's Simone Dupre and Joe Morrow, two first-round picks and two guys that I think are just really the future of the back end of the Penguins here. And Simone Dupre got a chance last year, thrown into the fire, in fact, down the stretch and in the playoffs, and he looked like a 10-year veteran. And, I mean, just calm, poised, 6'4", can really skate. I think, you know, he'll be fighting for a roster spot. And Joe Moore is a guy that, I mean, he's got an NHL shot at the age of 19 or 20, I believe, now. And a guy that I think he'll take some seasoning in the minor leagues, but he'll be up and we'll be talking about him before you know it as well.
Mike, Marc-Andre Fleury kind of collapsed in the playoffs and you just couldn't stop a beach ball, really. Him and Brizgalov going back and forth and who would let in more goals in each game. The Penguins have a little addressed, I guess, their concerns with their backup goaltending with Brent Johnson, probably good character guy, but not the best goaltender. They've signed Vokoun to a two-year deal, acquired and signed Vokoun to a two-year deal. What's been the reception, I guess, not only amongst Pittsburgh fans, but also maybe amongst, you know, the reception by Marc-Andre Fleury to that acquisition?
Yeah, you know, it was a bit of a surprise, I think. It caught everyone off guard that the Penguins would be this aggressive when they've already got Fleury signed for three more seasons, $5 million a season. They go out and they get Vokoun. And for me, the telling thing was that second year that they gave to Vokoun. I mean, I understand that's probably the asking price if they wanted to get him off the free agent market. But to really bring a guy in for that much money for 2 years, I think was meant to send Fleury a bit of a message. And the team has said all the right things since then, but Dan Biles, I had a chance to catch up with him last weekend at the draft, and he said this: usually what they'll do is sit down before the season and kind of schedule out the backup goaltenders' games throughout the year to make sure that they're giving the starter the rest. He pretty much said this year it's going to be a free-for-all, and whatever goalie's playing is the goalie they're going to go with. And you know, that's something that could get really interesting if you've got Fleury struggling early on like he's done in the last couple years here. We could see Vokoun really take over and make it an interesting situation for the Penguins. But I think when you look at a 1-2 punch of Fleury and Vokoun, it's tough to top that in the league. And I think that's what the Penguins wanted to do, was just shore up that goaltending situation. Because when Fleury struggled in the playoffs against the Flyers, as you said, they just really had no confidence in Brent Johnson. And it was a pretty quick exit for him because of that. So I think now they've got that 1-2 punch they can go with and kind of go with the hot goalie when it comes down to it. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's Thomas Vokoun at some point.
Mike, going back to last weekend's draft, the Pittsburgh Penguins selected Derek Pouliot. What did Pittsburgh see in Derek Pouliot that made him go a little bit higher than, you know, some of the quote-unquote experts were saying that where he was going to go?
You know what, the key thing for them is they took not only Pouliot, but Olli Maatta. Mm-hmm. And last year, their first two picks were Scott Harrington and Joe Morrow, as I mentioned. And Pouliot and Maatta actually played with Morrow and Harrington. And I know that the Penguins, their development staff, really pays a lot of attention to their younger guys and junior and working with them. And so I think they just had so much exposure to these two guys in Maatta and Pouliot that they thought they were guys that, you know, could fit for the Penguins and what they're trying to do. And that's, you know, good skating defensemen, guys that are intelligent, can really make a good first pass. And we're seeing so many teams emphasize that style of hockey mm-hmm. right now, especially on the back end. And I think that's where those guys fit, and the Penguins were willing to kind of make the push there. I wonder, you know, they really have nothing at forward in the system, and that's a bit of a concern as you move forward here. But if you have, you know, a Pouliot, a Mata, Moreau, Dupré, as I mentioned, I mean, those are guys that if they continue to develop, they're going to be valuable to other teams, and that's what the Penguins have done in recent years is they've traded Alex Goligoski, they've traded mm-hmm. Ryan Whitney, and they've got legitimate NHL wingers. So it seems to be that's going to be their plan moving forward as well.
Mike, last question. You know, the Flyers series was it was entertaining for fans, but it was probably ugly and heartburn-inducing for the Penguins management. Was that series an aberration, or was it a sign of more troubling long-term problems with the Penguins?
I would lean more towards an aberration. I think we addressed Fleury's struggles in that series, and sometimes a goalie can make or break a playoff series in a way, but I think it was a situation when Sidney Crosby came back from his concussion, the team was reading too much of their press. I think that they saw they were the favorites heading into the playoffs. I think they got a little bit too focused on some individual accolades as well. You know, Evgeny Malkin was going for 50 goals and an MVP. I remember James Neal was really pushing to get 40 goals this season. Even a guy like Pascal Dupuis had a point streak, and every night the team was trying to get him his assist. It was just something that I think can distract those guys after a while, and it's very hard to turn it back onto a team mentality when you get into the playoffs. So that's kind of what I would chalk it up to for the Penguins. I think they'll come in focused this season, and we'll see a different team heading down the stretch.
Mike Colligan of the Hockey Writers and Forbes.com and your new site, thehockeywriters.com/overtime, where you have co-opted our own Richard Pollock to contribute. You can find your work there. It's always great, top-notch work. Mike, thanks for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks a lot for having me.
Take care, Mike. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. A big thank you to Mike Colligan for joining us to talk Pittsburgh Penguins. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Appearing at Rumors, today will be his final day there. K. Trevor Wilson, very funny guy. He's been there all week having just a great series of shows at Rumors. You can check that out at rumorscomedyclub.com. 488-4520 to get tickets to go see K. Trevor Wilson. And just announced a special concert series event, September 7th and September 8th. Tom Arnold.
Tom Arnold from the Best Damn Sports Show, period.
That's right.
I'll be calling Sheldon for tickets to that. Well, shout out to Sheldon.
I assume, as usual, Sheldon will hang up on you, as you'd expect.
Sheldon and I follow Sheldon on Twitter. I have his... We talk.
Yeah, yeah. He had a tweet the other day. Did you see that tweet?
There's a new Mindell in town.
Did you see that tweet that Sheldon had?
Sheldon was power washing the deck.
I don't know how...
Which is odd, because A, he doesn't have a power washer.
You can rent those, I think.
He doesn't know how to use Twitter.
Also equally odd.
Central Division.
Continuing on our division-by-division, team-by-team preview, we move to the Central Division, where we will start with the Chicago Blackhawks. A team that has underachieved for the last couple of years, I would suggest. Richard, you're shaking your head already.
I have to get this Twitter on here. I mean, it's so much action. I can't even
figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Anyways, the Chicago Blackhawks have $8 million in cap space. It's debatable whether or not they have an NHL goaltender or not.
They need to do something here. I know, obviously, there's been talk now, Brindeur possibly hitting the market. Tampa or Chicago might be a good fit for him. They both would be a good fit for him. Mm-hmm. But they need to do a little bit into this mix. They have a lot of guys up front.
Would you say they've gone stale?
A little bit. And, you know, they got the Kane, Taves, Sharp, Hossa, Boland group. That's the core.
Yep.
You need to get a little bigger around them. You know, Stahlberg, Kruger, Frolik, Hayes, a lot of the same kind of stuff. Get bigger. Get a little bit more sandpaper. I know that's that cliche, that sandpaper cliche. And then the back end, apparently they want to move Chalmerson. They just re-upped Oduya. So you want to really get another top four defenseman if you're going to move Chalmerson. They probably don't think Leddy is yet ready for that move. I would assume they wouldn't, unless they wanted to replace Chalmerson with Oduya and then get Leddy as the number four. They want probably another top defenseman. And they can put Leddy and Montador together there. So you're looking at, I think, getting a little bit bigger up front, a little meaner up front.
Yep.
You're looking at the goaltending situation, and you're looking at another defenseman.
And the thing is, you know, Drew, you mentioned they're stale, and you know, and the Chicago Blackhawks didn't have a good regular season last year, and Jonathan Taves getting injured had a huge part of that.
2 years ago also, really. Yeah. They just weren't, you know.
I thought they were going to beat the Coyotes in the first round. And I think a lot of people did.
I didn't.
Well,
I didn't get many right, so I'll take that one.
You're not most people, Richie.
Go on.
The Chicago Blackhawks have a lot of things to deal with. I mean, the year after they won the Cup, and everyone knows this, they had to trade a lot of their team, and they're not trying to duplicate that team, but I think what they've done is they've thought that their core was good enough that they could bring in guys like Stahlberg, and I think Stahlberg is you know, an all right player, and he's debatable whether he's a top six forward, but he has flashes. But they definitely do have to bring in another defenseman. And again, let's be honest, Corey Crawford was not good, especially in those overtimes.
Yeah.
So you know, there's a lot of work to be done there. And you know, is Luongo an option?
Would you say that
apparently not.
Would you say that the Chicago Blackhawks are an easy team to play against as currently constructed?
I know easy. I mean, I would say that. Definition is you know, I guess it's how you interpret it, right? Is it easy to play against Taves, Kane, Hossa, Keith, and all those guys? No. Maybe physically, have they become a little bit easier to play
against? I was talking
more
physically, yeah.
I think so, Drew. I think they need to get bigger. I think they need to get a little bit meaner. And they're not going to do that by getting rid of Chalmerson, really. So, you know, their size, and I realize they have a guy like Carcillo, but he's useless. So you need to get a guy who can play and can be bigger, and he can play a little bit more physical. I do think that's a factor.
Moving along in the Central Division, the Columbus Blue Jackets, we've spent a lot of the show discussing Rick Nash.
Yep.
Further tweets are coming in that say more and more activity, more and more chatter around Rick Nash. So something conceivably could happen today or tomorrow when we're on air. Special 9 a.m. start time tomorrow.
Is the FBI picking up that chatter? Is that what's going on?
No, I don't think it's that kind of chatter. But special 9 a.m. start time tomorrow, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on location at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe for the free agency coverage. So you can join us down there at the cafe tomorrow. Rick Nash might be a subject of conversation tomorrow if something gets done.
Sure.
The Columbus Blue Jackets, you know, you look at this team, nobody wants to go there. I mean, the free agents that they're going to get, they're either going to have to, if they get any free agents, they're either going to have to tremendously overpay for them, which you've seen them do in past, or acquire by trade, because nobody really is going to be wanting to go to Columbus.
Well, boys, I mean, it's pretty simple what's going on in Columbus. They're not going to be a very competitive team next year, and they're rebuilding. And I mean,
Perpetually.
And there's so many question marks that will still remain even after they trade Rick Nash. And what they're going to do with Rick Nash is they're going to try to get a first overall pick. They're going to try to get a defenseman, a puck-moving defenseman, like a Michael Delzotto. And if it was a trade with the Senators, they might push more for a top forward prospect. But, you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets, again, the only thing that I see that's positive going there is, you know, the defenseman that they've compiled with Jack Johnson, even though, you know, Johnson is still underwhelmed. But Ryan Murray, I mean, he's a 1A prospect they've got there.
Yeah.
But really, Richie, we just talked to Aaron Portsline about this. You know, Mason and Bobrovsky, big question marks. They might have to go after a goalie there. And I mean, on forward, you've got a lot of question marks, you know, from lines 1 through 4. Nothing is set in stone there. So, I mean, they're probably going to get a very high 2013 draft pick, which is good because that's supposed to be a strong draft.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the Columbus Blue Jackets, I mean, where do you start?
Well, they need, you know, Drew, we can simply say they need talent. And they need talent up front, they need talent in goal, and they need talent on the back end. And while their back end may be the strongest, and that's what Scotty Howson said, you know, it's the skinniest fat guy, essentially, is what it is.
not the highest compliment you can ever pay a guy.
Is that an oxymoron? Or am I just a moron?
Moving on to the Detroit Red Wings, because that's way too easy. Detroit Red Wings, you know, Nicklas Lidström retired.
Yep.
You look at their back end, there is a glaring need at their back end right now.
There is, for sure.
They have $24 million in cap space. You know, it's all the talk is Suter and Parise. Parise and Suter.
Yep.
Do they get one? Do they get both? It would be, you know, we've been waiting for Detroit to take a step back. If they get neither, I would think it would be safe to say Detroit will take a step back at that point.
They're getting old too, Drew. I mean, they may not take a step back. They probably will, but especially in terms of points in the regular season. But in the playoffs, when they've worn down, that's the issue. They do have a good system, Drew, and we should point out that they have a lot of young players. Thomas Tatar, I believe is how you pronounce it, and they
They have Landon Ferraro in the system, and they obviously have young guys in the back end ready to go, like Brendan Smith, who will take the next step.
Another University of Wisconsin guy.
Jakob Kindle. So you have the pieces there, but the glaring need is on the back end, and it's to fill Nicholas Lidstrom's spot. And Nicholas Lidstrom was your top defenseman, left-handed shooting defenseman on the top pairing. Ryan Suter would be your top left-handed shooting defenseman on the right pair, on the left, on the top pairing.
I can't see. I want to step in, Richie. How Ryan Suter makes so much sense for so many reasons. And if you're Ryan Suter, what other organization do you want to go to? Even without Nicholas Lidstrom, I mean,
you're replacing him.
You want to go to a team that's going to make the playoffs next year. I mean, you know that Nicholas Cronwall is going to be your top defenseman. Obviously, aside from Suter, he'll be number one and two.
Yep.
But, I mean, you know, Brad Stewart's gone back to San Jose, but the forwards that they still have there are, top three in the league. To me, it's the one team that makes the most sense. And I think Pittsburgh is going to want Ryan Suter, but I don't know if the mix is right there, because you've got Letang. I think Detroit will get one of those two guys, and I think it's more likely going to be Suter.
And I think, Drew, that they need to get younger up front.
I would agree. Part
of that's in their system, but part of that's their older. You know, their core players are getting old.
I would agree with that. Moving to Minnesota, this might be the most just not talked about team in the NHL.
Yeah, you know, Drew, some things we're hearing is that Minnesota won't be as all-in on Suter and Parise as people think. So I would anticipate that the talk about Parise and Suter possibly going to Minnesota, from what we hear, is likely not to happen. And then what you're doing in Minnesota is you're working within really young, really good base of young talent. And Kevin Allen mentioned in the second hour Charlie Coyle and Michael Granlund. Granlund's a stud. Coyle is supposed to be a stud. So you're looking at a long rebuild here. Would they like to get that for star power? Probably. Are they going to spend the money on it? I don't think so. And you're looking at a team teams that aren't very good. Like, this team has good system, and part of that is the Burns trade last year, and that did help them with the system. But there are talent on the roster, guys like Heatley. Obviously, Koivu's a stud, but Heatley's not that great. Cullen's an older guy. Setoguchi's limited, and Bouchard's had all the concussion problems. I like the deal for Tommy Gilbert, but their back end is lacking, and that's where you need to address. The forwards aren't good. In goal, you're fine with Backstrom. The forwards aren't good, but the back end needs more work. And so I think they're going to try and sign some defensemen just to ease the transition of some of their other players, because you can't throw guys on the roster right now like they have, Stoner, Kampner, Scandella, Prosser, those guys. You can't throw them into top two roles and play with Tommy Gilbert, who's not really a top two defenseman. He's a top four defenseman. He's better off being your second pairing right defenseman, not your top pairing defenseman. So defense is their primary need, but they have needs up front as well.
Let me ask this question. If you had to trade for a goal, if you're in the market for a goaltender and you wanted to trade for one, would you rather trade for Roberto Luongo with his lengthy contract, or Nicholas Backstrom, who's a UFA after next season?
Well, I mean, I think Richie, again, as he usually does, is bang on. I think it's obviously Backstrom, because Harding is there, and they've given Harding a contract, but it's clear that Harding has a lower cap hit, and he's also probably capable of number one goaltender.
What's Harding's desire? He knows Backstrom's number one. He knows Backstrom signed for $6 million.
His desire is to be the number one next year, if Backstrom's not going to re-sign there.
But who knows? Like, that's just odd. Isn't that an odd
It's
decision?
A little bit of an odd move. I agree.
Does he have that fire? Does he want to be that guy?
Well, you don't know that. You don't know.
I know that by what he just did. Probably not.
Well, I don't know. I don't think that's fair to say. He might look at the situation and say, look, Backstrom is not going to leave. He is going to leave here after this season. He's a UFA.
When you sign a one-year deal then?
Well, I mean, because at some point in time, they won't pay Backstrom and Harding. So one of those guys, if they re-sign Backstrom to another $6 million contract, because it'll take probably in that range to get him, maybe a little bit less now. But, you know, they won't spend $7 million on their two goaltenders, so maybe at that point in time they trade him. But he's willing to play it out for another year. You know, but maybe
Toronto needs a goalie.
The grass isn't always greener on the other side.
Toronto needs a goalie. Maybe Florida would want to sign him. Chicago, Toronto, a chance to be a starter in a big team that has a chance to go far, as opposed to signing for 3 years when you know Minnesota's going to be bad for those 3 years.
So guys, I wanted to.
You never know what his life situation is all about.
I wanted to mention.
I don't criticize a guy for taking guaranteed money that's in his, bird in the hand.
He probably could get $3 to $4 million for 2 years. You probably could get the same amount of money for a 2 year deal somewhere else. Drew.
Well, a bird in the hand, though. You take it, it's there.
I wonder his desire to win.
That's a fair comment on your part, but I won't criticize a guy for taking an offer that's in front of him.
He can do what he pleases, but I question his desire to win.
Let's move on to Nashville. This will wrap up the Central Division. Do you think they're still in on Ryan Suter?
Well, Kevin Allen told us that they are, and I trust Kevin Allen's judgment. He's very connected in the hockey community. But their summer very much depends on what Suter does. Suter re-ups. They just signed Hal Gill. So Suter re-ups, and you got a nice core in the back end. You got some nice young defensemen, Ryan Ellis, Jonathan Bloom, although they don't love him maybe as much as they once did. And you have Suter, and then you have Weber, and you have Gill. You have depth. Like, you're good on the back end, and you're good with Rene. Then your needs are forward, like it always has been. You need more scoring. You need more talent. Radulov's probably gone. Kostitsyn's probably gone.
But so if Suter leaves...
Suter leaves, all bets are off.
A whole different ballgame.
If Suter leaves, that organization takes a significant step back.
Yep. Yes.
And that's not... I mean, I know their fan base is terrific, but they can't afford to be rebuilding for a significant number of years.
Yes.
You know, it's just... They have to put out a winner on the ice there in Nashville. That's just...
They don't have much on the books at forward. After next year, they have $9 million in the books, granted for two players who aren't worth $9 million combined, and David Legwand and Martin Erat, but they have money to spend. And they're going to spend a lot of that on Suter and hopefully on Weber. But if all goes by the wayside, they're in trouble.
Surprisingly, Nashville, I think, is an attractive destination for hockey players.
Because it's an anonymity.
It's anonymity.
And it's a good situation.
Successful, stable organization.
Yeah. And apparently, in terms of the nightlife and the atmosphere, it's a good place to go. That's a lot of the players enjoy that road trip.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what Suter does, because the other question, of course, if you're Suter, is can you pay me and Weber and Rene and get us enough forwards to help us win?
Yeah, you're going to need a forward in there at one point.
Yeah.
We'll see. Let's go to break. You're listening to the NHL Free Agency Preview Show with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by our good friend David Carr of Monopoly Realty. David takes the stress out of your real estate deal. You heard his commercial here on this station. Go use David Carr for all of your real estate needs. He is an expert and takes care of everything top to bottom for whatever you need in real estate. David Carr, 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Matt Niskanen, he was a restricted free agent with the Pittsburgh Penguins. He's now signed a 2-year contract with an average annual value of $2.3 million. So there's the guy the Penguins are expecting to take a bigger role on their defense.
You know, Richie, I like Matt Niskanen. He's a defensive defenseman. He's got a limited offensive upside, but he's a physical guy. He gets the puck out pretty nicely out of his own zone. But getting back to what Mike Colgan said just really quickly, I know you want to get into that, but they didn't get a lot for Mahalik.
He's right, and we know Richie is
very high on him.
Like
he should be. So
Niskanen is a puck mover, and if they can increase his defensive acumen and increase his responsibility there, improve his responsibility, and defensively, he can jump into that four. But he has to be able to take that next step on the defensive role.
Yep.
Northwest Division.
Starting in Calgary, where the Flames continue to give us our LOLs.
That's laugh out loud for those who aren't familiar
with
that.
What does Larry David call it? Not visual. Vocal texting? What does he call it?
It's a verbal texting. Remus already put it over on the screen here. Verbal texting. Dennis Wiedemann, 5 years, $5.25 million.
OMG.
There's just no justification for that contract.
Well, the best part about the contract is not just the contract. That's funny. But the fact that they traded a fourth-round pick...
And a prospect,
just to negotiate with him. Would have offered him that kind of deal.
He was going to become a UFA. About to become a UFA.
Yeah, so as if somebody would have offered him that much money. They would have been competing with somebody. Competing with rationality.
The Calgary Flames feel the excitement, and then they double down on their terrible investments yesterday. Lee Stempniak, 2 years, $2.5 million.
Well, I mean, like Lee Stempniak
could have become a UFA.
He's going to be a third liner for them. But the problem with these signing is it's not addressing the core issues here. You're going to lose Olli Jokinen, and essentially in Calgary with your top line being some combination of Iggy, Camilleri, and Tanguay, the problem is they're not addressing their secondary scoring needs. They have primary scoring needs, and you know. It's funny. I mean, Dennis Wiedemann, You know, he isn't a physical guy, and he's a one-dimensional player. He's not a very good defensive defenseman. But, you know, as far as offensive defensemen go, you know, Dennis Weidman's got a lot of skill. And, yes, they definitely overpaid for him. As far as I'm concerned, you probably could have got him for $2 million or less per year at least. But, you know, the Calgary Flames have much more issues than that. And, sure, you they're going to give Michael Backlund more time and time on the ice, and Sven Barchi's turned out to be a good mid-round pick from the 2011 draft. But the Calgary Flames, again, are going to struggle to compete for a playoff spot in the Western Conference. And, you know, they're not going to be active on the UFA market because they've already made these signings and they've tied up their cap hit in other guys. So, unfortunately, the Flames...
Hold on. I just want to make sure I understand. So they have a smooth skating defenseman who doesn't generally get injured and plays a lot of minutes, quiet minutes, and doesn't...
Jay Bouwmeester.
...hasn't reached his potential, quote-unquote.
You're talking about Bouwmeester?
Yeah. But then, so they complain about that contract, and that's everybody says they want to get rid of that contract.
And that contract's only another 2 years at $6.8 million.
They bring in Dennis Weidman, a smooth skating defenseman who has some flaws and is on the back end and can be good offensively but not great and isn't counted on defensively.
And was playing third pairing minutes in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. And then they give him just a little bit less than Bouwmeester. So they're basically bringing in a contract to complain about. I mean, again, Drew. A Dennis Weidman, in a rational world, comes onto the market, and he gets a three-year, $9 million deal.
Yep.
He plays somebody's, you know, fourth defenseman role on the right side on a pretty good team. They don't always trust him in the best situations, but he plays some power play. He can log a lot of minutes. He can play some peak. He can do all those things. And you live with the fact that he's pretty average, and he's okay, maybe a little bit above average. But Calgary, they're smarter than everyone. 5 years, $25 million. They need to trade for his rights. Then they sign Lee Stepniak, a tweener of all tweeners, on a team of tweeners, for 2 years, $2.5 million per year. Jay Feaster may be intentionally ruining this team to rebuild.
But they won't have any cap space to rebuild with.
Basically to have the ownership blow it up.
I don't know about that. I think that would be too... I think that's too smart. Too smart by half, I would suggest. That this team, they just don't know what they're doing. They just, well, let's throw money around and hope. It's been we've talked about it for 3 years now. Why would they change?
We signed Sarich, who couldn't even crack the lineup half the time.
Corey Sarich, 2 years, $4 million.
Where's he playing?
Calgary.
Yeah, no, I know that. But Drew, you bring in Weidman, so he's that right side defenseman. Where are you putting Sarich? You don't have any younger guys who can fill that role for cheaper? Come on. I mean, Sarich isn't a puck mover. I can hardly get around the ice anymore. I mean, Mike Gomesarek looks great compared to Sarich. That's the type of player that you're talking about, a stay-at-home defenseman who can't really get around the ice.
A big lumbering guy who has no foot speed, and when the NHL is all about foot speed nowadays.
Everybody's trying to get rid of that deal. They're excited to get Sarich off the books. They bring him back. It just defies rationality. I don't know what's going on there. But Bob Hartley must be loving it. I mean, at least they're consistent in their ability to contend with a poor team.
Got to feel for Iggy. I feel for him.
I don't. Demand a trade.
Yeah, that's one of the deals. That's one of the situations where you'd encourage a guy to demand a trade.
Demand a trade.
He'll demand a trade.
No, he won't.
Yes, he will.
If he hasn't demanded it yet, why would he start now?
Because he's gonna look around and see Dennis Weidman and Corey Sarich, and he's going to think, what am I doing here right now? I could go win a cup with another team.
I don't think he demands a trade. Colorado Avalanche, they have a lot of room, and they have to get up to the floor. $29 million in cap space. Mm-hmm. Nothing tremendous there, you know, on the team at all. They have to re-sign. Well, you know, there's
a little bit of a peculiar move of letting Mueller, not qualifying Peter Mueller, a guy who came up with Phoenix, was really impressive and then put on a lot of weight muscle-wise, slowed him down. He never really adjusted back from that, and obviously had concussion problems. Skill level's quite high. I think Colorado wanted to just cut bait. But what you have here in Colorado is you have, you know, a talented core. They just re-signed Steve Downey. I was fine with that deal for 2 years, 2.65. You have guys, Stasny and Deshane up the middle and Landeskog, and you're going to hope David Jones because they overpaid for him. But you do have some talent there, Drew. You need to, if you're Colorado, though, you need to sign defensemen. You need to bring in defensemen. You need to re-sign Eric Johnson, first of all. But you need to sign defensemen and improve defensively. That's your biggest need, is defense. And then after that is offense. And that's not to say they have great goaltending, but they have two guys under contract in Jugar and Varlamov. You traded a first-round pick for Varlamov. So it's another year where you're looking probably at the lottery, and if you're really smart, you'll trade that lottery pick for an average goaltender.
Well, Philippe Forsberg on the Colorado Avalanche would look a guy named Forsberg on the Avalanche would look pretty good. Because that was the trade that went to Washington is the Philippe Forsberg deal for Varlamov. So another bad general manager and Greg Sherman in the NHL, and
you hear rumors though that his hands are a little bit tied there too.
But not literally.
In terms of what?
By ownership.
By ownership, not authorizing him to spend money?
It's sometimes his powers are not.
Well, the attendance in Colorado certainly was an issue last year.
It was.
Certainly
is now.
What's that? There was nobody there. Exactly. Granted, there was a bad team. But that's if that's something you need to, that's worth watching.
Yep.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Free Agency Preview Show on TSN 1290. One final segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Free Agency Preview. Tomorrow, 9 a.m., Winnipeg Free Press Cafe, winnipegfreepress.com, TSN Radio, TSN1290.ca. The actual free agency frenzy gets underway. Join us. They are live on location beginning at 9 a.m. We'll have you covered on everything free agency related, everything that happens between now and then. And then once the bell rings at 11 a.m. Winnipeg time and people can start throwing around money like drunken sailors that they are. Continuing on with the Northwest Division, we finished the Colorado Avalanche. We laughed about the Calgary Flames. The Edmonton Oilers are next up on the list. Actually, it should be the Dallas Stars, but we'll do Edmonton first anyways.
Drew, let's just say that your alphabetical order is...
Alphabetically challenged, is that what you're saying? You look at the Oilers, they got Yakupov again. We know about all their talent up front. They have to re-sign Ryan Smith.
Yep.
You would expect that would get done. He is a UFA, but you can't imagine he's going to leave.
And you need
again.
A veteran like that to work with the youngsters. And obviously, they want Justin Schultz. That, I mean, they want an offensive defenseman there. They've got Whitney, but that's what they need. And
they need a defenseman who can play defense. They have Schultz, who's more of a defensive defenseman. They have Whitney, who can move the puck and has a good slap shot. The problem with Whitney, of course, is that he's injury prone, the ankle issues, the foot issues.
Yeah.
So that's the concern there. But you want to add talent on the back end. I mean, guys like Petrie have their flaws.
RFA as well.
Yeah, so you want to add talent on the back end, and you want to add probably a veteran or two up front, and then you have to see whether or not Devan Dubnyk is the guy. So
they have to re-sign Devan Dubnyk as well.
It's another year, though. You're going to have Dubnyk and Habib Boulin there, and you're going to see what you got in Dubnyk. You're a year off of Habib Boulin's deal. When you look up front, obviously the biggest thing they have to worry about moving forward is going to be all the contracts for all these talented players. But in terms of acquisition, you need to start acquiring defensemen, and as many defensemen as you can, really, who can play big minutes. And I know they drafted some, and they're going to have some guys coming through, but you need a guy who can play now.
Yeah. Nikolai Habibulin, this is the last year of that albatross of a contract.
That's right. You get him off, so you get two things. You get Habibulin off your books.
Wow, was that a bad deal?
And, of course, and part of Steve Tamalee's master plan.
Finish last every year.
Ha. Anyhow, hate the high course, ha. Huh? What's that from, Drew?
That's from Seinfeld, Richard.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
In terms of Habib Boulin, you get him off the books, and then you get Dubnyk. You see what Dubnyk is. Of course, Kevin Lowe in the papers is talking about how he's really encouraged by Dubnyk because he played two great games of the World Championships. Because, of course, two great games of the World Championships makes a great goaltender.
And
you're going to see what you got there, Drew. And you're going to see, in terms of defensemen, look at their defense, right? And you wonder, okay, what do they have? Well, on the active roster, they have Ladislav Smith turned into a nice shutdown guy, and Nick Schultz is more of a shutdown guy, but you need puck-moving defensemen who can skate, unlike Cam Barker, right?
And that's why they're in the Justin Schultz sweepstakes.
Right, exactly. You need defensemen who can skate, move the puck, and help your back end. Guys like Klefblom, they have high hopes for. But right now, you need guys who can play. And you need to not have guys...
Reinhardt as well.
Yeah, like Colton Tubert and guys like that. Andy Sutton. You can't have guys like that logging any kind of significant minutes.
Another guy, too, Matt Carl, might maybe fit in there.
Yeah.
A lot of teams are going to be, I think, after Matt Carl.
Matt Carl would fit in there.
Yeah, he's a guy that you should watch out for. He will garner a lot of interest.
He's going to go tomorrow,
I suspect.
Puck moving defense when you're big and who can skate will garner a lot of interest.
Yeah, it's pretty logical in that sense. The Dallas Stars are a team, they've been handcuffed for the last couple of years based on ownership issues, and the team was in bankruptcy. Now they have a wealthy new owner.
And they have a good staff. They're going in the right direction there in Dallas. Yep. Yeah.
You look at this team, and there's some talent there up front already. Louis Erickson, very nice player.
Got him under contract. Jamie Benn.
Jamie Benn's an RFA.
Yep.
So they'll sign him up.
They'll sign him.
I thought they announced that he signed.
Nope. He's an RFA.
Okay.
Getting Cody Eakin was very nice. A guy you control him for a number of years coming up.
Their need, Drew, I mean, they have needs at forward. They have needs at forward, but their needs are on the back end. Because after Goligoski and Robida and Trevor Daly, you don't have much. And you need, and obviously Surrey is on his way out. That's fine. Surrey's not great. Party. Surrey and Party skate like they have each other on their backs. So that doesn't help in terms of speed. They need to improve on the back end. Like Goligoski, Robida, and Trevor Daly can all move around the ice. So you kind of want another, you want a shutdown guy there to help in that top four. And you want to insulate and have some more defensemen. Up front, at forward, obviously you lose Ribeiro by trade, and it's a good move. You're hoping Scott Glennie can maybe take a step. Who knows whether or not he can, but you need help at center. That's clear. Because
yep.
You got Erickson, you got Morrow, you got Ryder. Ott can play, obviously play center, and Vern Fiddler can play center, but you want a top center, and they don't have a top center, and they're going to need that. So Jamie Benn will be number one, and the question is, who's number two? Because they don't want Ott number two. So, and you might want to put Ott to the wing, so although he's good at face-off. So you probably want him at center at third line, and you have Ben at first, you need a second-line center to replace Ribeiro.
Yep.
And what are you going to do about that?
Glennie's obviously a former Brandon Wheat King. Yeah. Another guy that just pops to mind is a guy like an Olli Jokinen or somebody like that, because there's not a lot of guys. But, Dallas
depends
is
what you think of Glennie as, because I think he still needs some time.
Yep.
And then I think your idea there in terms of a short-term deal for a veteran guy probably works, and you get Eakin in the fold. So you get basically a guy to replace Ribeiro, and you add to your youth.
Yep. And no, you're right. Dallas is a team that's going in the right direction because
and they have $30 million in cap space.
Let's be honest, Drew. Guys have been leaving there, and because of the ownership issues, it hasn't been a good attraction when it was for a long time. So I mean, yeah, Dallas is another team. So it's rebuilding
time. Joe Nieuwendijk knows what he's doing.
And in net, you have Kari Lehtinen, who's a great goaltender, really talented, obviously a former Atlanta Thrasher. He's on the books for 3.5 next year, and he's a UFA after that.
But his best every year last year.
They like Bachman in terms of backup, but they have Jack Campbell in the system. So there is some talent here.
Yeah.
There's American a lot of goalie, talent. University of Wisconsin, was it? Denver?
He moved to the Dub, though. To the OHL, excuse me, yeah. I think.
Last team is the Vancouver Canucks, the Pacific Division. We will start off our show tomorrow with the Pacific Division, 9 a.m. here on TSN 1290 and live at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. So you can tune in for our Pacific Division preview prior to the start of free agency. Vancouver Canucks, last team before we get to cheers and jeers. They probably need a defenseman. Yep. That would probably be where they would target some. They'd want some depth forwards.
Well, the question is this. You're letting Greg Nanny go. You didn't qualify him. You have Bieksa.
Rome, they didn't qualify either, right?
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
You got Bieksa, you got Hamhuis, and you got Edler, okay? So you need, and Ballard, they hasn't been doing it for them. They need a top four defenseman, preferably probably a right-handed shooting defenseman. Those don't grow in trees. But you want a top four defenseman to finish off that grouping. And a guy like Chris Tanev, you like, sure, and all that, but you need to have him coming in 5-6 kind of thing. You need a top four defenseman if you're Vancouver, and when you're looking up front, you probably want to add another scoring winger. With the Hodgson deal, you lost something there, so you want to add a scoring winger if you can. I know they tried David Booth, and I like David Booth. Higgins is off and on kind of thing. Hansen's more of a third line guy. You want a top, maybe they look at bringing Michael Samuelson back.
Yeah.
A guy who succeeded playing with the Sedins before. Although Raymond's obvious.
Sorry, he's a UFA.
But what's his name? Burrows has played well there. But a guy who can shoot right-handed, can play right wing, has a good shot, can play with a guy like Kessler. Maybe Samuelson's a guy they bring back as a second-line right winger.
Yep.
Don't have a ton of money to play with until they get rid of Roberto Luongo's contract. Only about $8 million because they still have to pay Mason Raymond as well. And he went to, they have the cut-down arbitration, but he's guaranteed at least a couple million dollars there.
Mm-hmm.
So they have about $8 million in cap space to play with until they get rid of Roberto Luongo's
Canucks
contract.
Canucks don't have to do much. They got the big thing is get rid of Luongo's contract.
And depth people. And I don't think they'll get rid of Luongo's contract very easily. That's for sure.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Very quickly, Richard Pollock.
I'm going to jeer these long-term deals. I've said it before. I'll say it again. It's enough. I mean, for the fans, these deals are so hard to move. There's little movement. These guys are there for 12 years, 10 years. I don't think it necessarily improves their production at all. As a fan, every time I see a 10-year deal, I see a fairly immovable contract, and I look down upon that.
Ezra Ginsberg.
Didn't really think too much about my cheer, but so I'm going to do the noble thing. I'm going to cheer you and Laura. It's your wedding weekend here in Winnipeg. We had a dinner last night, and we've got a couple of other big events coming, so I'm going to cheer one of my best friends, Drew Mandel, and his wife, Laura. on their Winnipeg wedding occasion.
Thank you very much, Ezzy. That's very kind of you. I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to jeer the Hockey Hall of Fame selection committee. There's no more shadowy group of people than those who select who get to go into the Hockey Hall of Fame. There's more honesty and transparency about when they elect a pope. I mean, guys, it's time to bring the selection committee out of the shadows, announce who's on the committee, and talk about the process involved with announcing these people that get into the Hall of Fame. You know, credit to those who get in there, but time to bring it out from the shadows.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the Sandin over Shanahan business.
Well, we can talk about that tomorrow. Special 9 a.m. start tomorrow from the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe.
Come on down.
It's the NHL Free Agency
Come
Frenzy Show tomorrow, 9 a.m. at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe and here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guests, Joe Beninati, Washington Capitals play-by-play man, Kevin Allen of USA Today, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch, and Mike Colligan of HockeyWriters.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website is www.illegalcurve.com. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. For Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Tim, and for Michael Remus, I'm Drew Mindell. 9 a.m. tomorrow. We'll see you again. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290, your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.